Du lytter til Hestedølærerne. Podcasten for dig, der er dølæge eller veterinærsygeplejerske og arbejder med heste. Mit navn er Emma Thomsen. Jeg er dølæge og arbejder som konsulent for Børinger Ingelheim. I Hestedølærerne taler vi om tilstanden og sygdommen, der kan ramme heste, men vi tager også andre emner op, som er relevante for dig, der arbejder med hestesundhed. Denne podcast er lavet af Børinger Ingelheim, og med denne podcast ønsker vi at give noget tilbage til dig, der arbejder med hestesundhed. Vi ønsker at tage emner op, som er interessante og relevante for dig, og hvis du har forslag til emner, du gerne vil høre mere om, eller tips til en gæst, du gerne vil høre, så tøv ikke med at kontakte os. Mine kontaktoplysninger finder du i podcastens beskrivelse.
Hello and welcome to the podcast Hestedyrlägarna or Hesteveterinärerna. This is Böringer Ingelheim's podcast for equine veterinarians in the Nordic countries, where we discuss topics that we believe are interesting and relevant to you. The next series of episodes, we will dive deeper into the exciting world of equine infectious diseases. And I am fortunate enough to be joined by my colleague, Louise, who is an American diplomat and specialist in equine internal medicine. Hi there, Louise.
Hello, Maria. How are you?
I'm very good. And I'm looking forward to these episodes where we will talk about the infectious diseases that can happen to our horses and what is worth knowing about them. And especially maybe what's relevant for us here in the Nordic countries. So, in the first episode, we wanted to talk a little bit about equine influenza, and that is probably a topic that you've heard a lot about before, but there might be some interesting things that we can catch up on or things that is worth a little bit of repetition. So, Louise, if we start with equine influenza, what is the deal with it? What is it, and why is it an important disease for the equine population?
Yeah, it's a very important disease for the equine population because it's one of the most contagious viruses that we know of, and it's spread worldwide. So we know this from human population as well, that particularly over the winter months where we keep horses a little bit closer, they get very close together inside the stalls. This virus has a tendency that if it exists in a population, it spreads incredibly fast. So that means that before you even recognize that some horses will start to cough, then the rest of the barn will already be infected and at the risk of having disease. And the problem with influenza is that it attacks the respiratory channel. And that means that it destroys a lot of the epithelial cells in the airways. And it can take a long time to recover. And some horses will unfortunately have problems down the road and have a hard time getting over this completely. And we know that the horses are athletes and they really need a thoroughly working respiratory tract in order to perform the work that they're expected to do. And they need to be 100% in their airways. And influenza really has the potential of destroying a lot of that ciliary function in the tracheal tract and make this cough a very chronic and severe one. And the young ones and the old ones are especially at risk. And we know that and horses with a poor immune system as well have a hard time coping with this virus if it comes through the barn. So it really affects a large volume of horses once it comes through. And that's why we worldwide have influenza pretty much as a core vaccine or a core disease that we need to protect the horses from. So that's why we are really focusing on that.
And we're going to come back to the vaccination and everything around that later in the episode. But so if we start from scratch then, you are an ambulatory vet, you are on call or you're working and the horse owner is calling you. My horse is sick, it's coughing, it has a snot from the nose, etc. And you suspect that this might be a case of equine influenza. So which questions would I then ask to sort of confirm the suspicion that this is likely an influenza case that we're dealing with?
I think the first thing I would ask is if the horse is a horse that's been traveling, because one of the risks would be to co-mingle with other populations. The virus will, it's not latent, so it's not in the population and then it just pops up like we know of other latent viruses. But this one comes from somewhere. And the most typical thing would be a horse that travels. And the thing is, the next thing I would ask is if the horse is vaccinated and when it was vaccinated as well. Because there is something, you know, horses have different ways of responding to vaccination. So if the horse was just vaccinated a month ago, then I would say that the immunity is probably very, very high. And the likelihood of this being influenza is low. However, if it's in the end of its vaccination, so it's just up for getting a vaccine again, a booster, then it's more likely that this one might have caught on some virus that it's in the process of fighting, but the immunity is not as high as it would have been in the beginning of a vaccination period. Then I would ask for some information about age, the job of the horse, and so forth. And then also, it would be very unlikely that you would have a single horse in the barn having coughing. You would always have, or most likely have, other horses that will show similar signs, maybe in various degrees. And one of the classic things about influenza in a barn is a dry cough. And they cough when they're standing still and they have a fever. So the dry cough that's just spreading like a wildfire through the barn is very, very classic for influenza. And it's a dry cough. It's very important, dry cough.
Okay. So the symptoms, you went in over it a little bit, but we're talking about fever. We're talking about nasal discharge. The dry cough that is very specific for influenza. What other symptoms can I expect to see in a patient with influenza?
They have a poor appetite. Some of them won't drink enough, so you can risk getting secondary problems such as a mild colic and just very apathic, standing in the corner, not willing to move. They probably do get muscle pain, just like we have when we have the influenza as well, unwillingness to move because of just joint pain and not feeling well. So a lot of this is if you could tuck a horse into bed, that's where they want to be. They don't want to move. They don't want to eat. They don't want anything. So it's a lot of supportive care for these horses and not forcing them to move because it's hard on their body and it's hard on their airways. So that's an important thing. So that's a lot of secondary symptoms that you should expect.
Yeah. So then considering that this is a very contagious disease and that you probably, if you have one sick horse, you will probably soon have several, if not all of them. So biosecurity is a very important issue when it comes to influenza. When you as a vet come out to a stable where you suspect that an outbreak of influenza has occurred, what is the first and most important thing to do when it comes to the biosecurity?
The first thing you should think of when you take the call is definitely to prepare for a potential biosecurity situation. So you as a vet should make sure you have protective gear, so some kind of first layer that you can discard, like first layer of clothes that you can discard at the site, so you don't have to drag it into your car afterwards. So when you get out of the car, you park your car so it's a bit far away from the barn. You dress up with gloves, you're a full cover for your clothes, preferably some kind of boot system as well, and a hair cover, just so you're sure that if any influenza particles are located inside the barn, then you can take off all that clothes before you get into your car so you don't carry influenza viruses on you, because you can act as a mechanical vector and drag that influenza disease to the next barn if you're not careful. So that's the first thing. Really think about that before you even get out of the car. Make sure you dress up. and then go in and assess the situation. Make sure you bring all your necessary tools. So think ahead, plan that you need some kind of blood sampling opportunity. You need swabs, nasal swabs, nasopharyngeal swabs if it needs to be accurate. So long swabs that you can get a dry swab of the nasopharyngeal area for virus detection. And then you go and assess the horse one by one. So when you're in a barn with influenza virus or potential influenza virus, the first thing you should assess when you get in and examine that one horse that you're called for is, of course, to go to that horse first, do a thorough examination. And then you need to decide whether you need to change your clothes or your protective gear going to the next horse if there's a second horse on the premises that needs to have an exam performed. But in the case of influenza, if it really is out loud influenza, you'll have to establish that, or you have to recognize that this virus will be spread all over the barn anyways. So that's a judgment that you have to make when you're there. So that's pretty much it. And then you have to prepare to have a thorough talk to the barn manager and owners in that barn about biosecurity and quarantine of that barn until you get your test results back. But as a rule of thumb, expect that it is influenza and set up biosecurity as is until proven otherwise, because that way you are ahead of the game instead of thinking, oh, it's probably not, and then leaving the barn without biosecurity. And then at the end of the day, it was influenza and the virus has spread through the barn and to other barns in the area. That would be not so good. Think of it as influenza ahead of time, and then you will be much better prepared.
Yeah, it sounds like there is a lot of work here for the barn manager or for the owners of the stable and the horses. And of course, it's all very important, but one question that might arise is, if I have two or three sick horses in a stable of, let's say, 20, how important is it that I isolate these three horses? Will I be able to prevent the other horses from getting sick, or is that already too late and they're just not displaying symptoms yet?
Well, that's hard to say, because usually that virus has been in the barn for some days before you even arrive and you recognize that you have signs. But I will always say that if you can isolate the horses, if it is possible, then isolate the horses, because you might decrease the risk of infecting other horses. Whether that's going to matter in the end and you maybe only get 7 out of 10 horses sick instead of 10 out of 10, that's still 3 horses that you protect from having the very high shedders standing in the middle of the barn. So if at all possible, then isolate the horses. If that is creating more traffic through the barn and a lot more higher risk of not really complying with the people that needs to take care of the horses, and if you know that the feeding troughs are going to be pulled through the barns anyways, then it might not be worth the work, because it means that the people that take care of the horses really need to be serious about trying to keep the isolation. If you feel that that's not possible, then it's your judgment as a vet whether it will pay off or not. So it's a little complicated. In cases where it can be done and you really think that the owners and barn managers are willing to really make the isolation, then go for it. Otherwise, leave the horses where they are. Never move the horses and commingle them with others. So having horses leave the barn because they're scared of what's going on in there, you should really discourage that, because you run the risk of taking an horse that looks healthy but is actually in the incubation phase and moving it to another barn and then infecting a different barn as well. So all horses need to stay on site. The horses that will be moved into isolation, they go to isolation and stay there without any other horses there. So that would be the way to go.
So the stable is then shut or you place it in quarantine. In Sweden, this is a reportable disease. So that means that you have to report as a vet if you come across it. How is it in Denmark, for example? Is there an authority that keeps track on this or that you report it to or...
No, but there are internal groups that allow the vets to easily notice if you have horses that test positive in certain areas. But influenza is not a reportable disease, so the authorities will make no official assistance into quarantine and isolation and so forth. So the veterinarians play a very, very important role in communication of all these aspects to the people involved around the barns. Fortunately, owners do recognize the threat when we talk about influenza. So that makes things easier. And the more that work in the same direction, the easier this goes away. But it will take time and people need to recognize that. One place where it is possible to follow these reports is on the Equine Infectious Disease Surveillance website that you can go to online. However, we do not have a lot of reporting going on in Denmark or Norway. All the reports from Sweden will be locked in there, but that makes it easy to monitor what's going on with influenza around the world. And especially in the countries around us, you can definitely see that in the UK, for instance, they have a lot of influenza cases reported all the time. Their vaccination rate might be somewhat lower than it is in the Nordic countries where we have a good high vaccination rate. But we do still have horses traveling, and especially traveling down south through Germany, where they also report a fair amount of influenza. Through Germany, we import horses from the UK and so forth. And that means that the risk of influenza all of a sudden appearing in the middle of your area is still present.
Mm. Yeah, it's in no way an eradicated disease. It pops up every now and then, even though, as you say, we have a good vaccination rate in the Nordic countries, so that we don't see it as often as colleagues in Germany or UK, for example.
Right.
But when it comes to then the horse owner and the stable manager, as I said, they are going to have to do quite a lot of work. How do you as a vet sort of communicate this so that they really understand what's important here? Because I can imagine, as you say, I mean, maybe the first reaction with some people is that I'm going to take my horses and leave to another stable. I don't want them to get sick. Or for that matter, that they don't really understand the importance of changing your clothes or being very careful with what you bring to and from the stable in terms of items and clothing and so on. So do you have any tips there of how I can communicate this so that they really understand the importance?
Yeah, I mean, the fact that it's fairly easy to communicate that the disease on its own is a serious disease, but if your horse is healthy, if it's vaccinated appropriately, then the risk of it getting symptoms is quite low. However, it's not zero. So if you have a vaccinated horse, it can get some symptoms of influenza, but it will be very mild and they will be recovering so much faster than unvaccinated horses. So it's more of a prophylactic, like a preventative thing that you can calm them by saying that if their horses are vaccinated, then the risk is fairly low. So, but you would still have owners that would like to just load their horses and leave. But then you have to communicate the risk to other horses, because even though that the horse is vaccinated, it can still carry the virus on their mucous membranes for a while. And so you can still detect the virus if you do a nasal swab. And the potential of that horse being able to transmit the infection to a new population in the other barn is still present. So because it's so contagious, then closing off the barn and just making sure that every horse stay on the premises and getting the care right there and then is the absolutely best advice. And I do think that owners understand this in general when you speak about making sure you don't infect other horses as well.
Mm.
So, yeah.
And a lot of common sense can be applied to this as well. I mean, we do have these diseases, influenza, and I mean, we have the COVID pandemic in fresh memory. So I guess most people are pretty used to thinking about viruses and how to protect yourself and others from them.
Right.
So I did all these, I did the talk, I did the quarantine, I handed in the reports where necessary. What else? So for how long does the stable need to be in quarantine, for example? How long can I expect this virus to still be present in the environment?
So this virus do stay in the environment for a while. When it comes to the horses, you can say that we usually say that within 3 weeks after the last horse have clinical signs, the barn should stay in quarantine. And once the fever and all the respiratory signs go away, it's the fever most of all, then it will be safe to lift the quarantine again. At that time, the horses will have a good immunity as well, but at least 3 weeks after the last horse has a fever. So one of the things that will be extremely important is that all horses will have a temperature taken twice a day in order to be able to detect if any febrile horses develop, because they can come in waves. So the first wave will be the very sick ones, and then you might have a second wave with horses that are not as sick, but those waves are very important to detect. And usually if you have more than 3 weeks passing without any new horses being febrile, that would be where you can lift the quarantine.
Mm-hmm. So that is with the stable and the group, so to say. What is the most important thing to do with the actual sick horse that you are called out to treat? What is the first thing that you do with it?
You do a thorough clinical exam, of course, to make sure that the horse is well hydrated still, because one of the things that we know with horses is that when they have a fever, they might not drink as much. And that, as we know, can lead to impaction colics and all those things. So we want to prevent that's happening. But you want to place the horse in a nice, comfortable spot where it has easy access to food and water. Remember, these horses are coughing, so they can be sore in their throats. So sometimes making mashes, something with a lot of water improve their water intake would be a good idea. Then for medication, it's all supportive care. There's nothing that attacks the virus on its own. It's all supportive care. It's the immune system of the horse that needs to tackle this virus. And in that process, it takes a lot of energy from the horse. Having one day of fever is like running a marathon. So having several days of fever will really take a toll on their energy levels. It costs a lot of calories to fight off these viruses. So expect the horses to be quiet and tired and sleeping a lot, which is fair. Mm. They need to. If there are some areas where you can take the horses for walks in a secluded area where you meet no other horses except the ones that are with those horses in the barn, if the horses feel like walking, that's okay. If they don't feel like walking, then just leave them quiet as is until they have some energy. Just expect and respect that these horses have no energy at that point. Mm-hmm. But for medications, non-steroidal therapy, that can decrease the temperature of these horses if they need it, will be fair. Remember, fever on its own is not dangerous. It just means that the body is fighting the infection. Mm. However, if we do have fevers above 40, most horses will start decreasing in their water intake and their food levels. But it all comes down to the individual horse. I have had horses standing looking at me like nothing is going on with a 41 temperature. Mm. And they're just fine. You won't be able to see that. And then I have horses standing looking at me with a 38.8 and look like they're dying. So mm-hmm. It's very, very horse dependent. So use the non-steroidal therapy if needed. Look at the horse and assess how sick and poorly it looks. The important thing is to keep having an appetite and keep having a horse that wants to drink as well, to stay hydrated.
Yeah.
So that's and then all the supportive care. If they do stop drinking, one of the things you could do is tube them with mineral oil or Epsom salts with lots of water, just to stay hydrated. It can help with some horses to make sure you have you avoid getting impaction colics. Mm. I haven't actually used mineral oil for many, many years. I rehydrate them with isotonic oral fluids or Epsom salt if I really feel that they're getting impacted. But that takes a lot of fluid therapy as well. So, of course, if they're really dehydrated and they really don't want to eat or drink, then IV fluids is one of those supportive things that you might need to do as well in certain cases.
Mm. But very symptomatic treatment, really, and assess every individual horse.
Yeah.
So obviously you want to confirm your suspicion with a nasal swab and perform laboratory diagnostics.
Yeah.
Do you need to do this on several horses? I mean, if you have, let's say you have 5 sick horses and you have 10 non-symptomatic, is it enough to just swab one horse and then you know you have the virus in the stable? Or do you want to swab all of them that are sick? Or do you actually want to swab more horses?
More horses are better, of course, but usually it will be the ones that are in the that are post the first couple of days of incubation, because otherwise the virus is taking in through the nose, it's accepted into the lymph nodes, and then they replicate there, and then it spreads and they start shedding the virus. So it takes a few days. So the time where you catch most virus particles will be when the horse is in the febrile state, and the horse with clinical signs. So I would say it's probably more relevant to swab the ones that do have some kind of nasal discharge or just a low grade fever or something like that. And of course, the sick ones are mandatory.
Mm. These horses, I imagine, can get really sick. I mean, they can be really low. And as a horse owner, that can probably be quite scary when you're used to having a healthy horse that is alert and responsive, and all of a sudden they're just standing and don't want to do anything. So I'm guessing that some reactions will be that this horse is too sick. I can't handle it myself. I want to bring it to the hospital. But then on the other hand, in the hospital, you don't really want these horses in first hand, because of course, because of the risk of contagion and infecting other horses. And you don't really want these horses to travel at all. But where does the sort of limit go? When do they have to go to the hospital? Because some of these horses will probably be that sick that they have to be hospitalized at one point or another. So when should I recommend that?
If you have something that appears life-threatening, so fever, again, does not constitute as a life-threatening thing. But if you start having impaction colics that need tubing several times a day in order to get some relief, that's going to be a problem. But anything that you would send to the hospital considering a life-threatening disease, that would probably be where you need to go. Otherwise, the horses should normally be kept at their barn. And because we don't want them transported, that on its own will increase the damage to the respiratory tract, then it would be 99 out of 100 cases would be much better off staying at home and being treated there. But if you start seeing this complete stop of manure production, dehydration, consistent tachycardia, something that you would, despite the fever, would still have sent to the hospital, you should definitely call the referral hospital and have a sincere talk with them and see what would be best in that particular situation. But most of the time, just having a fever and being dull, and if it's otherwise stable on its blood work and so forth, then it's much better off staying at the barn where it is.
When it comes to the prognosis, I mean, this can be a severe disease, but it could also be quite easy on the horse. It all depends on their immunity and individual sensitivity, of course. But in general, how long can I expect that it takes for this horse to be completely healthy and back in work, or at least be able to rehabilitate?
Yeah, that's a very good question. As a rule of thumb, again, because we like those, my go-to is saying that for every day of fever, you need to have 1 day, 1 week of rest of this horse. And these horses sometimes have 3, 4, 5 days of fever even. And that means that it can take a long, long time. And you also have to recognize that the remodeling of all the little cells in the tracheal area, it takes a long time before all those little fimbriae are recovered again. So those horses will be coughing for a long time just from the mere fact that they have damage to the tracheal epithelium. So 1 week of rest for every day of fever is very, very important and a good rule of thumb. And if you talk to the owners and set their expectations for this, then it's a much easier discussion to have when they expect that, okay, I'm not going to ride this horse for at least a month, for instance, instead of them thinking that they need to go to a riding competition in 1 or 2 weeks, because that's a long time for them, but it's not a long time for this disease. Mm. So definitely a long time should be expected before these horses recover completely.
Mm. Okay, then vaccination. I mean, this is one of the more common diseases to vaccinate against. And as we mentioned earlier, we have a pretty good vaccination rate in the Nordic countries. Most horse owners are aware that they need to vaccinate against this disease. So what are our options here? When we talk about protecting the individual horse, for example, how certain can I be when vaccinating that this horse is going to be protected and that it won't develop this disease?
It depends on what viruses are circulating in that particular area. And worldwide, we have several types of viruses circulating. We often divide them into, like, there are many of them, and they're all called influenza virus, this and that. And some we call from the Florida strain, some we call from the Kentucky strain. There's a Eurasian strain. So there are many, many strains of influenza virus. And influenza is we call it a chameleon. So we have so many of them, and they are they can appear very, very different on the surface of their virus particles. But the most important ones for us here in Europe at the moment is the Florida strain, and that's divided into a clade 1 and a clade 2. And what that means is that it's in the same family, so it has the same like kind of code on their surface antigens. The ones in clade 1 is in the same family. The ones in clade 2 are the same family. But if you look at how the vaccines protect against those families, it can be very different. So that's why the vaccines needs to be designed to protect for both of them, because we do have both of them circulating in Europe as well as in Asia at the moment. So we can also have outbreaks where you have both of the clades involved in the same. You would have one that's more prominent, but you might have some of the other laying underneath. So that's where some of the virus strains inside the vaccines get their names. So if you look at the recipe for the different vaccines, you can see that they use vaccine strain from Richmond, for instance, or vaccine strain from Belfort or from California. So they're named with some kind of origin from where they were discovered the first time. Mm. So right now, the International Health Association for Animals, they say that we should have both of those two clades. So we should have a family member from each of those two clades involved in the vaccines in order to make sure we're protected. Mm. So that's why you can see some of the names in the vaccines. Yeah.
So if you look at this phylogenetic tree for the influenza virus in the horse, you will see a lot of places, obviously. And you just explained that these are the locations where this particular strain or this particular virus was first detected. But there are many of them. I mean, there are, I don't know how many, but a lot of them. And if you look at this tree, you see there's also quite a lot of levels in this tree and so on. Can I assume that any vaccine that I use will protect against all these, or are many of them maybe even not relevant because they're not circulating, or how is that put together?
Yeah, so some of them, when you look at the phylogenetic tree with all these names on them, as I said, some of them are closer related than others. Mm. So they're coming in families, and some families are already extinct. So as the chameleon virus influenza is, then it develops all the time. So it changes the surface molecules all the time. And then if some of those surface molecules are not really optimized any longer, then that virus strain kind of sort of disappears. And we have some of those disappearing strains by now. So, for instance, we divide influenza into two big groups based on their surface antigens. And that's what you call H7N7, which is one of them. And that one is completely extinct. That was one of the first ones that developed from the mutation from birds back in the 60s. But the other big one is the H3N8, which is also including some of the influenza viruses that humans can get. But that one seems to be developing into several families. And some of them have gone already. But the big ones are the ones that is termed the Florida kind of subgroup. And that Florida subgroup is divided into the various clades, and those two exist still. So clade 1 and 2 are the only ones that are really relevant to us in the Nordic countries at this point.
Mm. Yes, I mentioned previously, I mean, we do have the COVID pandemic in fresh memory, and at least here in the Nordic countries and in Sweden, there was a lot of talk about herd immunity and what happens when enough people have either had a vaccine or had the disease and created a immunity, that this can also protect the ones in the population that are not vaccinated or immunized in some way. How is that with equine influenza? Is it enough if I just vaccinate my horse that is traveling, for example, and the others that are staying in the barn, they will not have to be vaccinated, for example? How is it with that?
Well, then you obviously protect the horse that's traveling, but you leave the rest of the horses at home free to be exposed for the virus and get sick. So the more horses we can get vaccinated and getting a good immunity in the population, the easier you can stop an outbreak. And what you can compare it to is if you have a hanging bridge with a lot of wooden steps across a big canyon, then the wooden steps will be taken away every time that a horse is vaccinated. So if the virus is on one side of the canyon, then the more steps are taken away because of vaccination, the higher it needs to jump to get to the other canyon. So it really is that by vaccinating your horses, you take away the bridge completely. So it's going to be harder and harder for the virus to jump across that canyon and get to the next population. So it's kind of like a wall that gets built higher and higher, or a bridge that's getting taken away. So all these access points for the virus to jump from one side to the other or above the wall is going to be harder for it. So
yeah.
So that's the kind of the borders that you build when you vaccinate the population instead of just an individual horse.
Yeah. So the more horses vaccinated, the harder it's going to be for the virus to spread, obviously.
Exactly.
What if an owner tells you that, so I have 3 horses in my stable, they never travel, they never meet any other horses, they never go to competitions, so there's no, I don't need to mandatory vaccinate them. Why would it be a good idea also for these horses to be vaccinated?
Because the virus is extremely contagious. And that means that you can bring it as a person, you can bring it from a barn to barn because it can live on your clothes if you're not careful. But it can also spread through aerosols in the air. And we have seen that those aerosols can spread quite far. So it just means that the neighbor farm might have something going on and then you're at risk at your barn, even though that you're not going anywhere. So the horses are not going anywhere, but you are. So you might be the one that takes the infection into your own barn as well.
Mm.
So we have to say that with influenza, that particular virus is just not one that you would take the risk. And especially because a lot of those horses that maybe are not traveling anywhere are the older ones that are just in a closed little herd. But if you leave them completely naive with no immunity against these viruses, they will become even more sick if they get in contact with the virus.
Yeah.
So it is very highly recommended to, even though that you have a closed little population, that you still consider protecting them.
Yeah. All right, then we are a little bit wiser when it comes to the equine influenza and what to sort of expect and how to treat and prevent it. In the next episode, we're going to be talking about tetanus, so stay tuned for that.
Tak fordi du lyttede med til Hestedyland. Hvis du kan lide det du hører, så læg en anmeldelse i din podcast app. Og glem ikke at fortælle dine kolleger om podcasten. Vi er snart tilbage med et nyt spændende afsnit af Hestedølærerne.